Some replacement level dudes talking about their home team. Starting a Braves podcast was their daggum dream. They like Nick Markakis, even the long ball. One day they'll have more clout than Ken Rosenthal. Oh, you're listening to that Knock-O-Nation podcast show. Oh, Knock-O-Nation podcast show.
Heyo, it's another episode of the Knock-O-Nation podcast show. I'm your host, Ken Hendricks. That is Josh Rhubarb Brown. Hey, Josh.
Oh, hi. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Oh, just hanging out up here in the mountains, thinking about y'all.
And that is JT Super Troopers Holton. JT, how you doing, buddy?
Shenanigans. I am still hurting over Bill Pakoda.
I got you.
Bill Pakoda.
I'm just happy to have gotten you. You know,
I'm going to hunt down a Bill Pakoda autographed item and have it on my shelf in here
to mark the day that I stumped the chump.
So that way I have the most random Braves autograph possible.
We talked about this weekend that's kind of a thing, right? Like all three of us are kind of the type that we don't want hyper memorable pieces in the sense of like I'm not interested in Hank Aaron's home run ball. I mean, if somebody wants to give it to me, I'd take it. But like,
sure,
you know, that's not what I'm out here trying to buy. I like pieces of memorabilia that I don't think anybody else has or is from somebody kind of obscure that means a little something to me. So, Josh, I know one of your favorite things, and I don't think you've acquired it yet, but I know you've been on the lookout for it, is that picture of Hank Aaron fishing. One of the coolest pictures that I've ever seen. JT, I know you got a lot of memorabilia. What's some of your favorite stuff?
One of my favorites is autographed Terry Pendleton baseball that my mother-in-law got me, because she knows my favorite childhood baseball player was Terry Pendleton. The other, I just got like last week, that I love. This was originally a gift from my great-grandma, who has since passed away. She was the one who got me into the Braves, got me into baseball. And my uncle had bought it for her. And my dad gives it to me. He says, all right, you got to guess what it is. He said, what's the it's from 1991. He said, what's the most memorable thing that happened in 1991? Well, golly, the Braves win the division, make the playoffs, and go to the World Series. And what is the most significant image from that season? Oh, Greg Olson jumping into John Smoltz's arms. And it's a drawing, a framed drawing that my dad framed for me that it's really cool. So stuff like that. Like most people, a drawing of Greg Olson jumping into the arms of John Smoltz, they wouldn't care.
Yeah.
Braves fans would, but that's like, amazing. You know, it's not up there with like, you know, this isn't like McGuire's, you know, 60-second home run ball or anything like that.
Or Kurt
but
Schilling's
to me, that's
socks.
So
right.
Dang cool. Yeah, right. This isn't a signed boxing gloves by Mike Tyson, but this is pretty cool to me. You're like, oh, that's awesome. Man, I like that. So those are two. And I still have a Javi Lopez autograph ball that my dad got me in 1994. Still got it. And it's never left the box, but it's totally brown. It's been in there forever.
Wow. That giggity. I enjoyed this past weekend hanging out with you fellas. A couple things. We sat on my porch and smoked a cigar together. I haven't smoked a cigar in, I'm trying to count, man. It's probably been like 2004 or 2005 was the last time I smoked a cigar.
Did you enjoy
it? I did. I did not enjoy waking up in the middle of the night with my mouth tasting like butt and ash, but I did the actual cigar itself. Macanudo for the shout out. It was pretty good.
That was a fun
night. I definitely
enjoyed
it. And I wondered if it was the kind that I got. I got a Macanudo. I believe it was a Maduro. Was what I got. It's like a real black.
That black leaf is pretty thick, pretty potent.
That may be what got me. Like I didn't notice really anything or but. In the middle of the night, woke up with an ashtray in my throat, and that was a little gross. But, you know, other than that, really enjoyed. I definitely enjoyed sitting on the porch shooting the breeze with you fellas. And one of the things we talked about, I would actually like to invite our listeners to pull up a chair and rock with us on the porch as we all smoke a cigar and talk about how Nakahoma Nation would rebuild the Hall of Fame.
Here we go.
We had a great conversation just sitting on the porch.
Yeah, this is weird because you had just said, hey, what do you want to talk about? I don't know, maybe the thing that Josh sent us in the email to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Which was this. We totally forgot. Thanks for your hard work, Josh, for bringing all this back up.
Yeah. So let me just say this before we go into this. Before our talk on the front porch, guys, I've been a purist. I've been a Hall of Fame, no steroids, by the book purist, small hall purist, and that talk changed my life. I mean, did it. Sincerely,
tell us more. Tell us more.
I think what set off the light bulb, and this is such a simple thing, but when JT said it, I was like, that makes total sense. And the way JT said it, I realized, oh my God, baseball is just a bunch of pretentious idiots. Mm-hmm. But JT brought up football, the NFL, and how they treat the Hall of Fame, and he mentioned some players who weren't even like all-time numbers great guys, you know, but when you think about it, they totally belong on the story. They are some stars, and they should be in the Hall of Fame. And it transformed my thinking of the Hall of Fame. And I actually agree fully. And I think that the Baseball Hall of Fame, after we delved into this and rethought it, the Baseball Hall of Fame does it totally wrong. And I love thinking about it this way. And it definitely opens it up to getting more guys in. You guys know me. I've been shouting from the rooftops for years, no steroids, no steroids, no steroids. But when we think about it, when we think of Barry Bonds, dude, I mean, he just you let him in. He's part of the story. Not everybody, but it was part of the culture. They weren't testing. It just is what it is. I don't like it. I don't like it.
There's also no concrete proof that he ever took
steroids. Yeah, but he admitted to it, though.
Only sorta. Never overtly.
It was leaked grand jury testimony.
Yeah.
So anyway,
whether or not you find that to be reliable or not, whatever.
It's not me saying that he didn't. It's me saying there's no concrete proof of it.
I think he totally did, but I still think he should be in the Hall of Fame. He completely did, but I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. But then we got weird. We started thinking about it as football thinks about their Hall of Fame, right? And what does that mean? Well, to me, it means, and I kind of made a list of kind of landmarks that a player should meet. And if they meet these things, then they should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
The way we talked about it, Josh, when we were talking on the porch, was we said maybe there's a list, because we were kind of brainstorming this out, like thinking they're sitting on the porch, rocking in the rocking chairs, about how to do this. And we said maybe there's a list of like, and we didn't have an exact number, but like 20 landmarks. And if a guy hits 3 or 4, 5, 6 of these at any point in his career, it should be an automatic consideration. Maybe it's not a guarantee, but it's like this really puts your resume up there of
you should
get serious consideration because you hit these
landmarks. So a couple of them to start off with, some quick high-level ones. If you are like the face of your franchise for like, let's just say like a decade. So for example, Dale Murphy, first ballot, no doubter, Hall of Famer. He was the face of the Braves for the 80s, and then you could argue numbers-wise to him. Most home runs in the 80s. I mean, you know, the MVPs. Another one, Todd Helton, right? Face of a franchise. You know, he was the Colorado Rockies, the best first baseman in Rockies history. He should be in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. Best player in Rockies history.
Yeah, you're right. I put
hell. Todd Helton started at Tennessee above Peyton Manning for at least one game. That's damn cool.
I put 5 gold gloves. Ken put 3 gold gloves. I don't disagree with that. I mean 3, whatever. I put 8 or more All Star appearances. This is the one that I think
put
is important.
5 or more. I put 5 or more, and the only reason is that's because some guys' careers aren't as longevity wise to get to 8.
I put this one because I think this is important. When you retire. And if you hold a record in some landmark thing, not some weird record, like you've hit the most doubles on a Tuesday night during night, you know.
Yeah, that's stupid, right?
Like,
right.
No, if you retire and you have the most saves, Lee Smith should have been in the Hall of Fame. for me, Roger Maris is a Hall of Famer. Why? Roger Maris was, I mean, a legend. He held the single season home run record for decades, and people thought that was never going to be broken. Kids grew up wanting to be Roger Maris in the 50s and or maybe 60s. Roger Maris, no doubter, in Hall of Fame.
We're kidding you.
He is not there anymore.
We're not, Oh, there he is.
Sorry about that. Hit a button.
Oh, hello. Hey, Ken.
Don't hit that button again.
And here's some other names we threw out that night that sound crazy, but y'all try to rethink this with us in a way that football thinks of the Hall of Fame, right? Football treats their Hall of Fame as important stars of their sport, and that may or may not mean they have the best stats, right? For example, Tim Lincecum.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. For example,
he was out of this world good for 5-6 years.
We talked about Kimbrel, you know? But yeah, I don't know, best closer in baseball for what, 8-9 years? Something like that?
I still think Kimbrel's probably going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but.
Yeah.
But that's how Tim Lincecum's a good example. Tim Lincecum had the same career, but it was in football in the NFL, and he was really exciting and a must-watch guy for 6-7 years.
Must-watch guy. Yeah, must-watch guy. Good point.
That would be Gale Sayers. That would be Terrell Davis. Hell, that would be Jim Brown.
That would also be Barry Sanders.
Right. Football also understands, hey, we know you're not going to play this for 18 years. You know, like, it's kind of rough. And so they don't have, in football, like most sports, is not numbers-based. I know that Emmitt Smith has the most rushing yards of all time. I'm not even sure if I could get within 2,000 yards of what that number is. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know he's got the record. I don't even know who's number two. It might still be Walter Payton. It might be somebody else.
I'm going to gamble here that it was 23,000 yards, but I'm not sure.
I had to look it up. I honestly don't know. I would say like 16 something. I don't know.
Other guys, Dwight Gooden should be in the Hall.
18,355.
Okay.
Okay.
Dwight Gooden.
18,355.
So split the difference between the two of us.
Yeah.
Doc Gooden, because you can't tell the story of baseball. Doc Gooden,
one of the most
extraordinary rookies to ever come on the scene.
Daryl Strawberry, Hall of Famer.
Absolutely.
Mark McGwire, Hall of Famer.
So for everybody that's freaking out right now and you're not sure you agree with that, think of it this way. Think of it if these guys played from age 20 to age 32 and had mediocre seasons. But then from age 32 to age 40, they put up the seasons that we know they had. Every one of these guys would be in the Hall of Fame. If Tim Lincecum did what Tim Lincecum did from age 32 or 33 to age 40, he would be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Right? I think we would all agree with that. But because he did it on the front end of his career and then it dropped off, we don't feel that way.
Right.
Yeah. I think JT said it best too. Like, were you a must see guy for multiple years? Hell yeah.
That's my biggest gripe with so many guys that make the Hall of Fame is that how many
Harold Baines? Harold Baines
bought a ticket to see Harold Baines, or Jack Morris or Bruce Sutter. Baseball, I'm not saying
Trevor Hoffman. Sorry, Trevor, but yeah. I mean, but maybe there are guys that get in because of the numbers like that, but also because of their star power, the story. Mark McGwire is a great example of this.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's easy to do because it takes a better athlete than me for sure, but we just talked about the other night, we mentioned a guy who played for 20 years named Terry Mulholland. Okay? If you play for 20 years, you can garner enough stats and accumulate enough stats where at the end of the day, you could be a Hall of Fame player by the numbers without ever even being the best player on your team. We sat out there on the porch and we talked about Craig Biggio. Now, Craig Biggio is a great player. Craig Biggio has 3,000 hits. That's outstanding. Craig Biggio, I think, played about 18 or 19 years. And for most of that time, may not even have been the best player on his team. But he's a Hall of Fame player. And look, a lot of guys don't get 18-year careers because they're not good enough. And there's a certain amount of respect that goes along with that. Because you had to be good to play that long. But at the same time, there's a word in that Hall of Fame. At what point was Jack Morris famous? At what point was Bruce Sutter famous? You know, I mean,
even Trevor Hoffman.
Accumulated stats. Trevor Hoffman. Like, yeah, Trevor Hoffman. I mean, at what point? Where's the fame aspect? Some guys have just accumulated a lifetime of numbers because baseball is less taxing on your body than hockey or basketball or football.
And obviously,
and that's not
like,
necessarily bad. Some of those guys
should
still be there.
That's just the way.
But you should have both
yeah.
standards, because, like you guys, we talked about this before. That Omar Vizquel, for me, I don't look at him as a Hall of Famer, but you, because he's got like 25 years worth of stats accumulated to have the stats that he has.
But I do.
But you guys also look at it and say, yeah, but he played 25 years of good, really great defense. You know,
baseball, and that's my gripe, is baseball only looks at it one way. They look at the number accumulation, okay, and that's fine because plenty of guys can do that. Like 3,000 hits is 3,000 hits, dude. If you get that, you're in the Hall of Fame. I don't argue that, but there's the other side of it. But were you?
It's
famous?
A shame, Johan Santana.
You can just be
fame.
Famous. A good example.
Yeah.
You can still have good the example. Fame and not have the numbers. In baseball, you have to have the numbers. And if you don't have the numbers, you're not in.
So one of the ways
I don't
we
believe that's the
this.
Whole story. I don't think that's the whole picture.
Yeah. One of the things we talked about was the possibility of making something like, say, a 20-man committee. And
exactly. The only way this will work is if there's – right. There's no – the baseball writer thing, the whole system shoved out the window. Like, you have to end that now because it is
you
so – it's stupid. It's so dumb.
It's political now.
It's so
literally, Kurt Schilling's not in because they don't
like
politics.
They don't like
you know, that's ridiculous.
But, yeah, to,
hey, Kurt,
to Kenny's
to be
point,
fair, Kurt Schilling has done himself no favors. He's not tried to play nice. Kurt Schilling has done himself no favors.
He shouldn't
in that
have to. He's a retired Major League Baseball player. He can say what he wants to say.
Exactly. And that's fine. But when you hear a debate about a Hall of Fame player in baseball, the first thing you hear is, well, I don't know if he's got the numbers. You hear that every time.
Yeah.
You don't hear that in other sports. You hear about impact. You hear about the societal impact. Did he change the game? Did he permeate pop culture outside
of the
sport?
Is Calvin Johnson a Hall of Famer? Is Calvin
Hell
Johnson
yes.
a Hall of Famer? Right, but he only played
he was the
like
best
six,
receiver in baseball.
Years?
He played a little bit longer than that, but like still, but for he was the best Megatron. Dude, he's the best receiver in the game. No doubt he's a Hall of Famer. But
Ryan
again,
Howard,
if that
Hall
was in
Famer.
Baseball, if he had an 8-year career and for 4 years was the best his position, he would be a Hall of Famer in baseball.
So what we talked about was the fact that you'd have to have like a 20-man committee or something, some number like that.
Kind of like NHL.
And you can split it into two divisions. One division of this, 10 of these guys looked at it from the local level. Like, was this guy a star for the Atlanta Braves? Like, was this guy a star even if he jumped from multiple teams? Was he a star on those, like Fred McGriff? Was he a star on at multiple levels, right? The other half of this needs to look at it nationally and longevity-wise. Did he have a national impact on the game? And consider their numbers, their seasons, all this stuff. And then they all vote. And if a person gets, like, say, 13 votes from this 20-man committee, then they're a Hall of Famer. Because that way you take into account people like Josh said, Ryan Howard, who's a Philly legend.
Hall of Famer in our new
definitely
system.
Definitely should be a Hall of Famer and might be a Hall of Famer for its all.
Jimmy
said
Rollins,
done,
Hall
we'll
of Famer
see.
In our system.
Right. But did he have the national impact that Mark McGwire did? Maybe not. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, nah, maybe he didn't. But he definitely had the local. And and people are like, oh, well, you have you can retire numbers and you can have a circle of honor and all this stuff at the local level. Yeah, you can, but that doesn't mean that a guy shouldn't also go into the Hall of Fame for what he's done on the local level. It can be both. Mm-hmm. It can be a combination of what he's done in two different places, you know. And I don't know that we've got it split up exactly right. I don't know exactly how you divide that up. But I like an idea of somebody looking at their bodies of work from intentionally different angles to then vote and say, I think this guy's a Hall of Famer based off the numbers. I think this guy's a Hall of Famer based off the impact on the game. I think this guy's a Hall of Famer based off of his local impact on the local community.
Like BMAC, you know, Hall of Famer.
Oh, absolutely. He's the second best catcher of his entire time, maybe even the first. Mm-hmm. Offensively included, he's the first best catcher of his era. He's number one.
Right.
I want to bring some up that we haven't talked about previously, but what if this happened? What if the Hall of Fame committee took a basically each team had a nominee that they brought forth to the Hall of Fame committee every year to weigh over? And said, here's who we're presenting in this year. And because the way I look at it, the Hall of Fame's job is to tell the story of baseball. And that book is basically broke down into chapters. Here's the chapter on the Diamondbacks. Here's the chapter on the Reds. Here's the chapter on the Yankees, yada, and go on down the line. Wouldn't it be cool if they said, okay, well, each team gets to submit a name for consideration every year to the Hall of Fame. Instead of having this whole ballot procedure, which I think is pretty... I think the balloting procedure is pretty unfair because based on luck, you could be stuck on a ballot with really, really good guys. And even though you're deserving yourself, you're not deserving as these three guys. So you didn't get enough of the vote to even stick on the ballot for the next 14 years.
And
that's kind of unfair for a lot of players.
A lot of our listeners are young, like 20, 22, and they might not even know this yet. But so the Baseball Writers Association is comprised of a lot of non-baseball writers, actually. So, you have
generic sports writers,
dude. You have like, you know, Joe Schmo who covers Miami sports. I mean, I've trolled these guys. Your boy has trolled these guys on Twitter for the last 7 years about Crime Dog. There's a guy that I trolled 1 year. He is the Detroit Pistons beat writer. And he has a Baseball Hall of Fame vote. And this is prevalent. This is not just – I mean, seriously.
No, right,
I found one guy for the Orlando Sentinel. He mainly writes about basketball. Didn't vote for McGriff. One guy in Miami, the Detroit Pistons guy I just mentioned. Several like, just AP sports writers. So just
there's
sports
a couple
writers
that
in general.
Don't even write anymore.
Yes.
They get to keep their vote for 5 years, I think it is, after they quit writing.
Exactly. But there's a lot of people who – who just are sports writers that get a vote, or there's people who used to be baseball writers who are now just random sports writers, but these people haven't watched a game since, like, you know, 1998. You know, these people don't understand. These people don't even know who Scott Rolen is. Those kinds of people, right? They exist, and there's a lot of them. And because of that, and because it's hard to police that, the system's stupid. It's so dumb. Maybe it made sense in the 50s and 60s when you had baseball writers, but the way things are now, you don't really as much. I mean, in my perfect world, I mean, yeah, it'd be cool if like a bunch of like DOBs had votes. That'd be cool, but
I'd love to pick the committee. Give like DOB,
right?
And you could even rotate some of these spots out, but like seasoned beat writers that cover baseball, period.
Right.
Have like five of those guys.
Yeah.
Then have like Jason Stark, Jeff Passan, Buster.
I'm fine.
Like, put these guys in there. I don't care. Like, they know baseball. They pay attention. You know what I'm saying? Like,
the NHL.
I don't care if I even agree with them 100%. If they're there, I know they keep up with baseball. I have zero doubts that they know the players going into the game. And they can look at it and say, why in the hell is Andrew Jones not in the Hall of Fame? He's the best center fielder we've ever seen with our eyes,
or at least
the second best. You know, like maybe
you're
maybe
telling
you
me
can say
like,
somebody
like,
else, but
Andrew has his faults. But you're telling me Jack Morris was a better player than Andrew Jones? Come on,
no way.
That's crazy.
You're
telling
me Bruce
Sutter was a better player, or Harold Baines was a better player than? No, that's insane. If baseball writers were if they provided the same criteria for other sports, they'd be looking at guys like Marvin Harrison and being like, well, he never won a Super Bowl. Dude, he was like the best receiver in the game for like 5 years. Like, like, he's definitely a Hall of Famer. Well, Donovan McNabb never won a Super Bowl. Dude, Donovan McNabb is definitely a Hall of Famer. Like, are you kidding me? That's not even an issue. That's
so the NHL...
Not even something you would bring up.
Yeah. The NHL Hall of Fame committee consists of 18 members appointed by a board of directors whose mandate shall not be shall be to nominate and elect candidates. So, yeah, 18 people are on the Hall of Fame committee for hockey.
And I think the other thing that I would do away with is I would do away with the number they can put in a single year. You can put as many people in the Hall of Fame as you want to. I don't care how many you vote for. It doesn't matter to me because some – look, I've been watching baseball for 30 of my 37 years that I've been alive probably. And when I look at that, like, there's been definite seasons when there were more good players in baseball than in other seasons. And there were eras that, and maybe it was steroids, I don't know, but there were definitely eras of better players and eras of weaker players, you know. So some seasons, yes, there should be 15 guys going into the Hall of Fame, especially if you're talking about those late 90s seasons. Mm-hmm. I could easily have put 15 guys in the Hall of Fame out of some of those teams. But then the 2000s kind of lulled. Like, and maybe that was the crackdown on steroids. I don't know. But there was definitely less impact players across the game, less personalities across the game. And so maybe those years you don't have but seven guys.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you have to meet a quota.
Just loosen it up. Just make it loose. Quota. Make it fun. Make it like make it the Hall of Fame. Yeah. Like kind of like right, JT has said. The NFL, sorry, not NFL, but the Pro Football Hall of Fame, which not NFL, Pro Football Hall of Fame, which means guys like Herschel Walker, as JT so eloquently stated on the porch that night, should be in, has 48 people in it. 48-person selection committee. I mean, that makes total sense to me. Compare that to baseball has, I think, 480-something
yeah,
right.
voters.
Let me ask you a question. Basketball has the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame. It's not the NBA Hall of Fame. Pro Basketball Hall of Fame. I'm a big listener of the Dan Patrick Show. Last week, I don't know if y'all knew this or not, but the guy who wrapped up his career with the Atlanta Hawks officially announced his retirement after 22
Vince
years.
Carter.
A guy named Vince Carter. Correct. Would you guys say that Vince Carter is an NBA Hall of Famer?
First ballot.
Yes. So,
I know we're not an NBA podcast, but agree. Now, there was actually people debating, and I don't know if this is because everybody's bored because of coronavirus and there's no sports, but there were actually articles circulating online, is Vince Carter a Hall of Famer? And my first thought was, is this baseball? Like, yes, he's a Hall of Famer. Are you kidding me? Like, Vince Sanity, the most important player in Canada's history. The face of the Raptors franchise, 22 years in the league.
Like, I don't know if NBA video games would be around if there wasn't Vince Carter.
Vince Carter was so dang cool and permeated the culture of NBA so much that, like, dude, like, everybody knew, like, who's the best dunker in the league? You'd be like, oh, Vince Carter.
Do you remember the Vince Carter, Grant Hill back and forth stuff and all that stuff with Sprite and all those different things?
Vince Carter was insanely, you know what he was? Famous.
Yes.
He mattered in basketball. So when I heard that argument that people are actually bringing up, because Dan Patrick was like, yes, Vince Carter's a Hall of Famer. Of course he is. But the fact that it's even a debate, it made me think, like, do other people think like baseball people? Because baseball people would go, well, does he have the numbers? I'm like, numbers? Dude, like, I don't care if Vince Carter never won a championship. Dude, that guy mattered. That guy was important. That guy was fun. Yeah. That guy was exciting. Slam dunk contest with Tracy McGrady.
Put his arm.
Bouncing the ball. And then Frederick Weiss was the 7'2" guy that he jumped over in the Olympics.
Yep.
Dude, I mean, that Vince Carter freaking mattered. And that was my first thought was, and that's a sad thing to say because that tells you everything that baseball gets wrong.
Yeah.
Was when people debated that, I thought, golly, are these baseball writers?
How crappy baseball fans can be. Yeah.
And look,
it shouldn't
we know
be. It should take this long to go, oh, he's a Hall of Famer.
And we know the arguments. Josh has made them before that the Hall of Fame is part of the museum and that the museum tells the story and all this stuff. But the truth of the matter is, Hall of Fame should not be merely off your max level of play, and it should not be merely off your longevity. It should be a complete picture of how you impacted the game. Guys, let's talk about a few of the things. Josh, you hit on a few of them, but let's talk about a few of the things that we think should be automatic consideration things. I think in today's game, if you strike out more than 2,500 people in your career, I think you should be considered for the Hall of Fame. Doesn't mean it's an automatic, but it's an automatic consideration. If you hit 3,000 strikeouts, then I think it's like an almost automatic that if you struck out 3,000 people, you should almost automatically be considered for the Hall of Fame. That's a lot of strikeouts, absolutely. You know?
Yep.
What's some of the other things, fellas? I don't want to just sit here and...
Y'all had said that
500 generic, dingers.
500, 3,000 hits. I think you bring that down even.
I think
bring it down to 400 and 2,000. Because at that point, you reach that for qualification. It doesn't mean you're in, but it means you're on the ballot. Because to me, like, you know, and this isn't like you have to have all these qualifications to hit it, but these are checks in your favor. So, but I mean, to me, like, I don't know. There should be a sliding scale. Like, you can hit 380 career homers, but if you were certainly famous for in other areas and you did well in other areas and you were certainly a person that people bought tickets and paid to see, then yeah, you should be evaluated for the Hall of Fame.
And I think these numbers could move a little bit based on the temperature of baseball and how the game's being played at the time. Like, in the 1990s, I think anyone that won more than 25 games in a year should have been for more than, say, 4 years, should definitely be considered for the Hall of Fame. Now, I'd put that number at, like, 18. So if you went 5 years as an 18-game winner, then you should be getting some consideration. And some people are going to roll their eyes and say, "Whoa, the win stat in baseball." No, a win stat matters. That's what ultimately matters. Like, I get that it's not the end-all be-all, but it does matter.
You can't fall bass ackwards into 5 years of 18-plus wins.
Right, exactly.
You can't. I mean, Jason Vargas once won 18 games, and that's ridiculous, but that doesn't happen five times. Like, you have to be a good pitcher to do that.
So on the other end of the spectrum, I think winning a batting title, even for one season, should get you consideration into the Hall of Fame. Doesn't mean you're going to get there. Some guys win batting titles and it's a total freak thing and they just have like a crazy year. But it should put you in consideration that if you batted well enough to have a higher batting average than every other player in your respective league, you should get some consideration for the Hall of Fame. Like, that's a big deal to do. I think the same thing goes for if you're a home run king. You know, if you hit 58, 60 dingers in a season and you win the home run title for that year.
Yes.
Even if you batted 120, you know what I'm saying? Like, you struck out.
Right.
Yeah. It should at least get you consideration, you know?
A guy we talked about on the front porch was Sammy Sosa.
Yeah.
To me, Sammy Sosa is in because Sammy Sosa mattered. If you were a Chicago Cubs fan in the 1990s, Sammy Sosa mattered. And Sammy Sosa smashed some home run records, although he was overshadowed. But he was the only guy to break Roger Maris's record twice. So, I mean, dude, Sammy Sosa matters. And the thing is, baseball is skewed so far one way. Well, does he have the numbers? Who cares? That's part of the question. The other part was, did he matter? And they had totally ignored that side of the equation. They only look at the numbers.
Stats?
They don't look at that he mattered.
What are some numbers that prove that a guy mattered? Because I think what we tend to do 3,000
hits, I don't know if 500 home runs.
Right, but those right there, Josh, I think they cover. I think if you hit those now, you almost make it in.
Well, that's what you're asking, right?
Oh, you do. Definitely.
No, I'm not. What are you asking? Let me clarify. Those are aggregate numbers. So, in other words, over an entire lifetime, you put up a bunch of numbers. But what are smaller sample size numbers that should still get you considered? Like
20 game wins.
Like Chris Sale, 300 strikeouts in a season. No. That's an instant. Like if I had to vote right now, Chris Sale's already in the Hall of Fame for me.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I don't know if he'll ever win again, but that's where I feel.
50
you know?
Saves, 50 homers. Golly. I mean, the rest are kind of tough.
But those are the kinds of numbers that I think we need. We need like short-term metrics.
Well, that's what
that
I was
makes sense to pay attention to.
Yeah, that's what.
But
I
you were saying long-term metrics. You were saying 500 home runs, 3,000 hits. That's like a whole career's worth of numbers. Okay. What I'm saying is, how do you get guys on the shorter sample size, like a Tim Lincecum, or you know, Andrew Jones. You know what
maybe
I'm saying?
Maybe there's like not an answer to that. Maybe there's not. Maybe it all comes down to, did this guy matter? Did Tim Lincecum matter? Hell yeah, he did. Two Cy Young Awards. Freak. He's the freak.
Yeah.
Every kid wanted to be the freak. He's awesome. Hall of Fame. Done.
No. Yeah. And I think there's, here's the thing. I think baseball has handcuffed themselves to numbers so hard that they can't get away from it. And they can't just ask, did this guy matter? And they'd say, oh, Tim Lincecum won two Cy Youngs. Yeah, but he didn't pitch long enough. Well, who cares? I mean, if Tim Lincecum, if a meteor fell on Tim Lincecum's head, he died at age 29. Here's what you got. Is that a Hall of Famer? Did he matter? And if you're a Giants fan, you say, hell yeah, he mattered. Like, Tim Lincecum was awesome. People bought tickets to see Tim Lincecum pitch. I don't know if people bought tickets to see Rafael Palmeiro. Palmeiro's a great example of a guy that had 500 homers, that had 3,000 hits, but he accumulated it over a long time. Never once, and Josh, you played a little league ball. I played a little league ball.
Yeah.
Not once you get in the batting cage and pretend to be Rafael Palmeiro. It didn't happen. We didn't even think about him as a kid. He played He played during our childhood. And not once did either one of us think about Rafael Palmeiro at all. None.
That's true.
I hate to say that. Sorry, I'm sure he's a good guy. That's fine. Yeah. But
this really
he didn't permeate outside of the game, outside of the numbers. He didn't make a difference.
And with our new system, with that said, it doesn't really recognize guys like your Scott Rolands, who you look at his numbers, you're like, oh my God, that guy might be a Hall of Famer. I mean, freaking defensive machine, man. But did you want to be Scott Rolands when you're? I don't know if he had the star power.
No,
I
didn't.
Maybe
never
in Philly,
like,
he did. Dude, I don't know.
I don't know. I never once was like.
I just love the idea.
I'm pretending to be Scott Rolands.
I just love the idea of, the more I thought about it, man, after we talked Saturday night, I love the idea of like a 20 to 40 something person committee and loosening it up. And like Ken said, baseball has become so handicapped by the numbers to where it's not fun. It's just not fun. When a guy like Jack Morris gets in, not just when a guy like him gets in, but when a guy like Jack Morris gets in and then it's celebrated by these nerds in their mama's basement, you know, it makes me cringe. Because, like, he had some good games in the World Series,
you know,
but, like,
he
didn't matter. He didn't matter that much. He's not a Hall of Famer.
If baseball Hall of Famers had their way, then, like, the greatest running back of all time would be Frank Gore. Because Frank Gore has accumulated yards over a long career. And he has stayed relatively healthy. I mean, he had knee injuries in the past, but he's been able to produce a long career. Good for him. I mean, he's cashed several checks, and that's awesome, man. I love to have his bank account. But Frank Gore, and he'll eventually get in the NFL Hall of Fame because his numbers will be there.
He should
there
be, right.
To where he can't be denied, and that's fine. I mean, he can't be denied. But Frank Gore was never famous. Frank Gore was never – if I showed you a picture of him in a suit and tie – you wouldn't know who he was. You had no idea.
I don't know.
You wouldn't recognize face Frank Gore. I'm going to show you a picture of a man right now and you say, is this Frank Gore or not?
I remember Gore. Frank Gore was awesome when he was with Indianapolis. I mean, I remember
He was
Frank
awesome
Gore
in Miami when I was a senior in high school when he was playing for a national championship. But you know what I mean? He's accumulated numbers, but he's never been like famous. I've never been like, ooh, Frank Gore's coming to town. I got to buy a ticket.
This is where I probably differ from you guys. I think you would get more Jack Morris's in because I think what we're saying is that to somebody, Jack Morris mattered, and his numbers are on the low end of the spectrum.
That's a good point. That's fair.
And for his place, I think Jack Morris deserved to be in the Hall of Fame, especially if you grew up a fan of the organizations he was in. I mean, he's the kind of guy like Dale Murphy, not saying they're exactly the same, but like for us – Dale should be in, obviously. Well, for some other – for people that were fans of Jack Morris, they kind of felt the same way, you know? Like,
right.
So, I mean, I kind of –
For other people in other cities with other favorite teams, they may say this guy should be in the Hall of Fame. You know, if I'm on the south side of Chicago, I may say, hey, Paul Konerko should be in the Hall of Fame. Well, if I live in San Diego, I'll be like – Paul Konerko didn't mean crap to me, you know?
And that's where I feel like you need, like, this divided committee somehow that – one part of it looks at numbers, one part of it looks at national impact, and one part of it looks at local.
Right.
And somehow all that amalgamates together, and they come up with an actual defense for why the guy's in the – but you know what? That's really what I'm asking. That's really what I'm asking. I want this committee to be able to give a dissertation-like defense. Like, you know, you like if you're getting your doctorate at the college level, you have to give a dissertation and then defend that dissertation. I would like for the committee to be able to defend why they put a player in the Hall of Fame. As long as you can defend it, I'm fine. Like, as long as you can look at me and say, we put him in because he made a huge impact on the city of Atlanta. His numbers, while not the best all across the board, were extremely solid for this period of time. Like, if you can give me that strong defense, I'm fine with it. Like, just be able to defend your numbers. Like, no. Defend what you did. And I'm
but
fine
I think
with
you
it.
Can. I think you can defend numbers all day long without the player ever truly mattering. I mean, you can defend Bruce Sutter being in the Hall of Fame without a single person ever being like, yeah, I love Bruce Sutter, and I bought a ticket just to see him play.
I mean, the Atlanta Braves are still paying him like $10 million this year, so I'm just saying
true.
Somebody thought he was
that's
pretty
true.
Good
player. I wish I had his agent. But I think in baseball specifically, because of the longevity of the game, that you can, by the time the guy's career is over, you can defend his numbers on paper without that guy ever truly making a dent in the greater, God, I hate using a word like zeitgeist, of baseball. Like, you can accumulate numbers over a 20-year career without ever really
but Bruce
breaking
was
into pop culture and being famous and being a big-time deal. You know
but Bruce
I mean?
Sutter was a six-time All-Star. He was a Cy Young Award winner. He went to the 1982 World Series, and he had, like, the four-times Reliever of the Year Award. He deserves to be a Hall of Famer. I know you guys don't remember him, but he 100% deserves to be a Hall of Famer.
Okay, yeah, but look, I mean,
those
Reliever of the Year Award.
I'm not even looking at his he was the best reliever in baseball, and back then that's what they gave it out for. That's what they called it.
I'm probably being unfair to Bruce Sutter just because he's a name that popped into my head and I'm picking on him, and that's probably not fair.
But I think a lot of that happens. That's what I'm saying is I'm a fan of a bigger hall to begin with because I think smaller stories matter as much to the game as giants do, and I don't think it should benefit you just because you played in New York or L.A. that you are more Hall of Fame qualified because you played in those two cities. So for me, I like the idea of Bruce Sutter's and Jack Morris's getting into the Hall of Fame because that tells me those guys were great. No, they may not be Babe Ruth legends of the game in the sense of, like, all-time game changers, but they are legitimately some of the best players of their era. I mean, a Cy Young and six All-Star games, that's enough for me to say, yeah, the dude deserves to be a Hall of Fame. I mean, that's legit good, you know, especially if you've got some other peripherals to go with it, you know. Plus, somebody's still paying him in 2020 $10.3 million. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, you're right, and I'm probably being unfair by picking on him, but you get my general sense. Is that did people buy a ticket to see him play? Did he matter in the grander scheme of things? Did people who were not baseball fans know who he was? Because I know people that say I don't watch the NBA and I don't like the NBA and I don't have a favorite team. But if I said, hey, who's Vince Carter, they'd know who he is, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not a stretch to say that. Mm-hmm. People that don't watch baseball don't know who Bruce Sutter is. People that don't watch baseball probably don't know who Harold Baines is.
But see,
yeah, you can say it about a bunch of NFL guys, too. So, I mean, you can't have both
that's
ways.
That's true. I mean, that works both ways.
If we want to loosen it up, if we want to loosen it up to this new way of thinking to where, like, the Tim Lincecums, Ryan Howards, the Jimmy Rollins of the world get in, then we have to honor guys who, like the Bruce Sutters, like the Jack Morrises, who have the longevity and the hallmarks that that probably warrant them to get recognized. Even though they weren't on the cover of the Wheaties box or whatever. But we can't have it both ways if we kind of rethink this thing.
I think what we're saying is there's different definitions of fame, and I think it's important to include them all. Like, I think simply being the Yankees mascot is not the only way you should be considered for the Hall of Fame. I mean, let's be honest. If Derek Jeter played in Cincinnati and doesn't have five rings, I'll take that away. Doesn't have the five rings or whatever many it was.
He's Barry Larkin.
Right. So is he a Hall of Famer?
And Barry Larkin
with worse defense. With worse defense than Barry Larkin, you know?
And that's a good example to bring up because do I think of Barry Larkin among the all-time greats in Major League Baseball? No, I don't. But if I'm a Reds fan,
Barry Larkin should be a Hall of Famer.
For
me, I wanted to be Barry Larkin growing up. I know, Josh, you loved Ozzie Smith. I loved Barry Larkin. Like that was my guy. You know, like I love me some Barry Larkin.
And Barry Larkin was that. He, you know, and that's why I go back to if the Hall of Fame is a book, then the franchises need to be chapters of the book, and you can't tell the story of the Cincinnati Reds without Pete Rose, but also Barry Larkin. You know, and Barry Larkin may not have mattered to a kid growing up in Manhattan, and he may not have mattered to a kid growing up in Seattle. Yep. But if you grew up in Cincinnati, if you grew up as a Reds fan, man, Barry Larkin was your dude.
And there's a line there because I was a kid from Georgia and he mattered to me, and I didn't even watch the Reds play.
Like,
you know what I'm saying? Like,
I knew
he was good. I knew he was good.
Yeah.
Dave Stewart is a Hall of Famer in this new system.
Oh, absolutely.
If you grew 100%. Up in Oakland, man, like on the West Coast, dude, he was your boy.
Oh, name we talked about the other night that should be a Hall of Famer, Tim Hudson. Tim Hudson should be a Hall of Famer, and not just for his time in Atlanta, which was good.
It mattered to two franchises.
But he mattered to the Oakland A's for sure. Like, you don't get that.
Another name that
an example
name
I brought up.
Sorry.
I was going to say, you brought that up. I said, that's a good example. I said, tell the Oakland A's story. The top four things that come to your mind are the Bash Brothers.
Right.
Billy Bean and Moneyball.
Right.
Ricky Henderson.
Yeah.
And then the Big Three.
That's
I mean, those are the four biggest things.
Jose Canseco, Hall of Famer.
For our younger listeners, JT, you may have to fill in a few of those. Who were the Bash Brothers?
About Mark McGwire and Jose Canseco.
Right. And
the big three was
for
Mark
Mulder,
Barry Zito, and
Barry Zito. A lot of people don't remember Mark McGwire actually playing for the Oakland Athletics. They remember him as a Cardinal.
Huge deal for the Athletics was, dude, there was not a, in that era. Dude, you couldn't find a cooler franchise than the Oakland A's. The way they branded the Bash Brothers and made them a thing. It was,
And who were the big three again?
Mark Mulder, Barry Zito, and Tim Hudson.
I always forget about Mark Mulder. I remember Zito and Huddy, obviously. But
he was good on the X-Files. I liked him on the X-Files.
Kind of Scully. I mean, they were I agree. I think I think Tim Hudson's Hall of Famer.
But if you're telling the story of that franchise in that chapter of the book of baseball, you can't tell the story of the Oakland A's without those people.
Yeah.
And then I think, if nothing else, Tim Hudson was solid enough for the Atlanta Braves to pad the rest of his career to make that very arguable that he should be a Hall of Famer.
Right. He's not going to the Hall of Fame as a Brave. He's not.
Right.
If I take
his
top
pinnacle
five
was not in
all
Atlanta.
Time, it's not Tim Hudson. Right. But he had that helped his case. But, you know, it's just being able to tell the story of each team. And if that's your goal is to promote your sport with your Hall of Fame, then you have to be able to tell the story of each team involved in your sport.
We talked about Dave Parker. Yadier Molina should be a Hall of Famer. I know we like to pick on him, but Yadier Molina should be a first ballot Hall of Famer. There's been nobody else.
Greatest Cardinals catcher of all time.
Right, exactly. Probably. I'm trying to think if there's an argument.
Greatest catcher.
Mike Matheny? Are you kidding me?
And really, top two in his era. It was him and B-Mac.
Yeah, him and B-Mac and Buster Posey. And Buster Posey's a little younger than them. So,
Buster's Hall of Famer.
Yadi known for his defense. You know, more so than everything else.
He had a lot better bat. Yeah. Early on, good bat. And Atlanta Braves will always remember him for his bat and his throat slashes.
And his neck tattoos.
Horrible neck tattoos. Guys, have you seen where Major League Baseball... Look, we have defended the owners slightly because we do think this season is on all of them being stupid and writers being crazy leftists and everything else. But MLB ownership will always have its fair share of stupidity included. MLB 60 game... MLB Network 60-game season package price. You know what that is, JT?
$8 a month.
Oh, I haven't even heard.
60 games, $59.99. Same price as a full year, I believe it is. Joy.
Sorry, I'm out.
Blackouts will still be a thing. Now, this is the thing.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah, I'm
Blackouts are still
A lot of people complain about blackouts, but this is the deal with blackouts. Wait, MLB does
so
not
Canada
have the
still
ability.
Can't see the Blue Jays play?
Hey, apparently not. MLB does not have the ability to override blackouts. Like, let me make that clear. Blackouts are a thing put in by television contracts. So, you know that $14 billion contract or whatever it was that Arizona Diamondbacks signed a few years ago? $16 billion, I think they got off that contract?
Yeah.
Yeah. The TV network said, no, you're not putting this out in any other form in our network because we own the rights to your show. That's why we're paying you billions of dollars, right?
Right.
So I get why people are frustrated with MLB over it. That being said, I don't think MLB could change it if they wanted to because I don't think that's an MLB thing. I'm pretty sure that's a contract thing.
I didn't know that.
With the television. Mm. I would assume that's it. Maybe I'm wrong. If you're listening out there and you know something different, please fill me in. But I'm 99% sure that that's correct. And
Tweet him at did my voice just crack?
It did a little bit. You sounded like a 12-year-old boy.
Hey, wow. Bobby Brady joining us on the show.
Please tweet Kenny
Peter Brady
your thoughts on this at what's your Michael Twitter handle?
NTN. Ken DH. Yeah.
At Ken DH.
Yeah.
Send
Josh,
all your hate
you
mail
know,
at Ken DH, by the way.
Do you know that if Nick Markakis never sets foot back on a Major League Baseball field, hopefully he does, but if he never does, do you know that currently he has the exact same numbers as Adrian Gonzalez?
Who?
Adrian Agones and Nick Markakis. Would you like me to look this up? I saw it earlier today.
Did not know that. Wow.
And this is the part where we get Josh to admit that Nick Markakis is not really a Hall of Famer.
Adrian Gonzalez had 3,462 total bases, a .358 OBP, and a .287 batting average.
Uh-huh.
Nick Markakis has 3,462 total bases, a .358 OBP, and a .288 batting average.
So you're telling me that Agon is a Hall of Famer?
Sounds like it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Mm. He's a lot better than I thought he was.
Yeah. You know, the one and only Taylor Bryant, the guy out there on Twitter that follows a lot of people and unfollows a lot of people, he had a good question. I think it's a good one to end this week's show on.
Why does that guy unfollow and follow all the time?
I think maybe he's trying to get more follows from people that don't follow him. I don't know. I saw the tweet, though, and it's a good tweet. If you can meet one Braves player, coach, or personnel, past or present, who would it be? And my answer was Satchel Paige.
That's going good. That's good.
For those that don't know, Satchel Paige was the pitching coach in 1966 for the Braves because he had 1 year left on his MLB. He was 1 year away from receiving his MLB pension of $200 a month. And the Braves reached out to him and was like, you know, we'll put you on the payroll so technically you can get that MLB pension. And so on paper, he was the pitching coach, but he didn't really – coach, he really hung out in his living room in Kansas City, but he did come to some exhibition games apparently in Atlanta nice. That spring, which is pretty cool. And there's really cool photos of him and Braves uni.
Hey, remember that cool stat I told you guys about 1966, Tony Kloninger and Joe Torre?
There you go.
Hey,
That was amazing. Yeah, I never knew
that. Okay, the first game in Fulton County Stadium, the pitcher was Tony Kloninger, and the Braves catcher was Joe Torre.
Right.
The last game in Fulton County Stadium was in 1996. The Braves played the Yankees in Game 6 of the World Series. The manager for the Yankees was Joe Torre, and his bench coach was Tony Kloninger. Which is totally random
that
those two guys would be at the first game and the last game of Atlanta Fulton County Stadium. Super weird, but baseball's a weird sport. All
right, so who would you guys meet?
Oh, my goodness. Anybody in the Braves' history that I could meet?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I guess the easy answer would be Hank Aaron, right? Because I'd love to be like, just a picture of me and Hank Aaron would be awesome.
Okay.
But I don't want to go with that because it's just too easy. Oh, goodness.
This is just meet or this is hang out? What was the question?
Meet and hang out. Meet, hang out. Spend some time with him.
Satchel Paige is a really awesome answer.
That's a strong answer.
yeah, it's tough to beat Satchel Paige. That's a good one. I don't know.
You can't give an easy answer like Kerry Leidenberg. You gotta think outside the box.
Joe Torre would be tough to say no to, because
that's a good answer.
Not only the playing with the Braves, but the Yankees, the World Series, the getting fired by Steinbrenner, was there bad blood? You know, how did you feel about that? You won 4 championships.
All those crazy personalities.
And we're told to hit the curb. Yeah, all the inside stories of the Yankees. I mean, how would you not like have a steak dinner and a few glasses of wine with Joe Torre? I mean, that's hard to say no to. I would go with Joe Torre.
What about you, Josh Brown?
Man,
I have an honorable mention if you guys don't pick it, but we'll see.
Okay. You guys are going to laugh at me because it's not that interesting.
I'm not going to laugh at you.
Is it Kevin McAlvin?
I want to hang out with Terry Pendleton.
Oh, cool. See, I'm not laughing at that.
He rides Harley in the mountains. And
TP's
really
awesome,
cool,
dude.
Yeah, I want to hang out with TP.
Okay, so my honorable mention here, probably should be honorable mention feels light here, but Babe Ruth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, if you go that far back into...
And now, to end this episode, Josh Brown will take us on a journey back through the annals of time.
This week in Atlanta Braves history. You ready for this? This week in Braves history in 1992, July 6, 1992, Commissioner Faye Vincent, using his, quote, "in the best interest of baseball power," end quote, mandates the National League's realignment for next season, which would be 93, forcing teams to be more geographically correct in their respective divisions. So basically, the Braves and the Reds moved from the West to the East. They didn't have a Central yet. So back when we were young whippersnappers, Tyler Knight, we watched the Braves play the Dodgers a lot. And it sucked because they would play late at night. And we were in third grade. And mama would yell at my dad because my dad would let me stay up late to watch the Braves because he's a great father. And my mom, who hated me, would get really mad at us. And I don't want to talk about it
all the time.
But we went through a lot in third grade, okay? The Cubbies and the Cardinals moved to the West. They used to be in the East. So before there was a Central, there was just East and West. And so Cubs and Cardinals – in 93, moved from the East to the West. Also, in Atlanta Braves history in 1986, July 9th, Braves outfielder Dale Murphy's consecutive game streak comes to an end at 740 games when he sits the bench in the team's 7-3 victory over the Phillies at Veterans Stadium. And 30-year-old, 5-time All-Star, hadn't missed a game since September of 1981. Wow.
Wow. That's
the Marcakis level. Also, finally, this week in Braves history, July 6, 1986, at Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, first baseman Bob Horner, or was he a second baseman? I think he played both, right? Hit 4 dingers, becomes the 11th player in Major League Baseball history, hit 4 dingers in 1 game. However, 3 of the 4 homers are solo shots. Solo shots, which don't really matter, guys, if you guys listen to Talking Chop. So solo dingers don't really matter. The Braves won that day. They beat the Expos 11-8.
How cool is it that during the Braves' streak of division championships, they started kicking their ass out West? And they say, now you got to go play these teams out East. And the Braves said, well, we'll kick their asses, too. And we did that. That's pretty
cool. It's great.
Didn't Horner play third base a lot, too? He played first and third, right?
Never played in the minors.
That's right.
Horner was drafted out of college and went straight to the majors.
That's right. That's right. What a baller. Do you think like he just...
He played 330 games at first base and 684 at third base.
Like, I'm not trying to get all weird, but like, do you think, I mean, how does Bob Horner look the way he looks and have all that? I mean, he's just dripping. Like, yeah. I'm just, it's a weird era. It's the '80s. You know, I'm just saying, like, he had to have an STD, right? Like, I mean, how do you play baseball with that uniform, with the sexy uniform, with the spandex waist belt and the mustache? And the blonde curly fro, dude? Are you kidding me? He was tan? Yeah.
Bob
tan,
think,
blonde curly fro? Like, I would do him.
He
could have
walked
he
off the baseball field and joined the Hollywood Blondes in a heartbeat. Right. I mean, he looks like the third member.
Right. Freaking dripping
with stunning
all the
Steve
sauce.
Austin and flying Brian Pillman.
Yeah.
Look, Dale Murphy is probably the only baseball player in the 80s to not have an STD. Just throw that out there.
It's probably true.
Yeah. I think Dale Murphy might be
probably
the only one.
Only sports player.
Yeah, he played more third base than first base, but
probably the only athlete to live in Georgia and not know what a Coke tastes like.
Not know what Coke snorts like either.
Well, a lot of people had Coke problems in the '80s, but Dale Murphy is like, I'm not doing either one of the two Cokes available in this locker room.
Mormon man. And that's going to do it for this week's Nakahoma Nation. If you'd like to support the nation by becoming a member of the nation, a citizen of Nakahoma, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/Nakahoma Nation, where you can join at three different levels. You can be a $5 patron, a $9 patron, or a $21 patron. Get you a shirt, sticker, and a shout out on the show if you would like. All kinds of different ways to connect with us.
And maybe we'll come into your house next July 4th.
Or not. And also, shop.spreadshirt.com/Nakahoma Nation for all your latest swag, gear, chef's aprons, hats, beanies,
chefs,
book bags, cups, tumblers, all kinds of stuff available. Chefs. You know, like a
chefs?
Chefs. Chefs.
Wow.
What are you thinking, JT? Anyway.
What's a chef?
It's going to do it for the Nakahoma Nation. This has been a fun week. Have a great weekend.
What's going on?
We'll see you next time.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to the nation's leading replacement level podcast. Nakahoma Nation is brought to you by Nakahoma Nation patrons. To become a patron, visit patreon.com/Nakahoma Nation. For new episodes and content, visit nakahomanation.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at NakahomaNTN. Special thanks to research assistant Braves Auctions Guy and spiritual advisor John D. Howard. See you next week, knuckleheads.